Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Dennis Prager Show, where we talk about everything in life, and that includes the single most complex issue. Cold fusion is simple compared to this subject. Dark matter, is simple compared to this subject. And that subject is healthcare, and I have an expert on the subject on with me, because we have to at least achieve clarity if we don't even have solutions. Nina Ocherenko is Senior Policy Analyst for Healthcare at the Conservative Heritage Foundation and its Center for Health Policy Studies. It's the leading, one of the leading conservative think tanks in America and in the world. And Nina Ocherenko, welcome to the Dennis Prager Show.
Thanks for having me. And don't worry, healthcare confuses me sometimes too.
That's a good sign. I feel a lot better. Thank you. You helped my self-esteem, and as we know, that's critical in America today. Leads to better health, doesn't it? Self-esteem.
That's right.
Yes, exactly. By the way, before anything, did you happen to hear? I reported last hour on the. If you didn't hear about this, you must look into it. There is a Canadian member of parliament for the Liberal Party. It's important for the Liberal Party, who unfortunately has breast cancer, came to California for her surgery.
Does not surprise me. That's something that we hear a lot about, where these countries that have single-payer systems, more government-controlled systems, have to depend on other markets, a free market, like in the United States, in order to get the quality care that they feel that they deserve.
I want you to hear the statement of her spokesman.
Mm.
We are entering the realm of dark matter here. Ready? This is when asked about this. Well, here she is, a member of the Liberal Party, which endorses this national health care system. But yet, when it comes to her own breast cancer, she goes to the United States. This was his answer, her spokesman. In fact, Belinda thinks very highly of the Canadian health care system and uses it when needed for herself and her children.
Mm.
But she didn't use it when needed for herself. That's the whole point.
And it almost creates a two-tiered system. No matter how much the government tries to control the services that these citizens will get, those who probably have more money and more prestige can leave their system and get health care elsewhere.
That's right.
We see the same things happening in the UK with people coming to the U.S. for services as well. And if the American system ever went that way, I would assume that those members of Congress who believe in government rationing and government control of health care, when they would need it, would find somewhere else to go, leaving the rest of us stuck with a system that bureaucrats decide on the care that we get instead of letting us, with our doctor, decide what's best for us.
All right. Well, of course, a lot of people would say that bureaucrats determine it now, just the bureaucrats aren't in the government. They're in the HMOs and in insurance companies.
That's right. It's a system that has nothing to do with the consumer and has everything to do with the people who pay for the care. And that, unfortunately, in today's system, the consumer themselves, the people, the patients, are actually isolated from the entire healthcare system. And there really needs to be a change in a different direction if we want to solve what's ailing the Americans' healthcare system.
So to be a conservative is not to endorse the present system.
Exactly. The status quo does have its faults. It's a patchwork system filled with a public program that wants to gobble up more and more people onto its program, and a private sector system. But in the private sector system, it's dominated by an employer-based system. That system worked great in 1950 when you got a job at 18 and you stayed with it till you were 65. It made perfect sense. You're in one location, the same employer, same health plan. They want to keep you there. Today, we have a far more mobile workforce. People change jobs. People change cities of where they live. They move cross-country to get a better job. And healthcare now, because it's tied to it, doesn't make as rational a sense anymore to tie it to the place of work. We need to find a way to put consumers in control so that we can have portable health insurance. So it doesn't matter what job you have, or even if you have a job, you can be sure that you have health insurance.
I have come to understand, though, or come to believe, based on my understanding of the origins of employer-based paying for health care, that in itself is not such a great idea. Why, I don't understand why businesses should be saddled with that particular expense. It was done in World War II because they couldn't increase salaries at the time, so instead of increased salary, they gave you health care.
That's right. And now Americans, unfortunately, have become very accustomed to it. You know, they focus on wanting to stay in one job in order to keep their health insurance. And we need to break that mentality. It can't happen overnight. I think we learned during the first Clinton health care proposal that overhauling a system overnight is really not the best approach. We need to make some incremental changes to put us on a different path, to give people alternatives to the current system. Today, you know, we see fewer and fewer employers even offering health insurance because they can't afford the premiums. And so we need to find a way to create another avenue, another pathway for individuals to get their health insurance so that they're in control of the decisions. They don't depend on their HR department to tell them what their benefits are going to be. They can go out and select what kind of a health plan they want. There is certainly a role for employers in the future. You know, it is a competitive advantage for employers to want to offer benefits to their employees. That's what keeps them from getting new employees and keeping employees.
Well, why don't they just do it on salary and keep the choice that you at Heritage want us to have?
That's right, and that's something we've been advocating for a long time, that we need to move, as we have in many of the pension systems, away from a defined benefit into a defined contribution. If an employer wants to help you with your health care, then they should say, hey, we give you $100 extra a month for your health insurance.
Yeah, no, you were saying, though, you would like to see the employers stay in the health care industry.
I would like to see them if they choose. You can't force employers.
No, of course not. Yeah, okay.
Into a mandate of it. But I do think that there's a role. They can help sign you up, maybe, you know, for your tax purposes. Maybe they can help facilitate educating you about choices that are in there. We do it with these educational savings accounts, et cetera. You know, employers are not necessarily sponsors of these plans, but they give you information, et cetera. I think employers, many of them are very paternalistic, but in a good way. They really want to help their employees. And there are a variety of ways that we can look at transitioning employers away from picking a health plan for their employees and moving them into helping them with information, helping them navigate a healthcare system. So I don't think that they have to be out of the picture, but I do think we need to start thinking away from them making the healthcare decisions.
Have you seen the Hillary Clinton plan?
I have looked at it, and it's 10 pages, as people say. You know, we're, as one of my colleagues says, we're waiting for the 10 three-ring notebooks to come out next that will explain all the details in this.
Well, what's wrong with the 10 pages?
Well, you know, she's learned her lesson. I will point that out. And her packaging and messaging of this proposal is surrounded around very appealing themes to the American public, things that I agree with, that I, when I read on the first page, you know, sounds wonderful. The problem is, what are the policy tools she is going to use to make this happen? Let me just chat a little bit about what some of these appealing themes are. Things like choice. She's promoting that people will have new choices. That's a wonderful thing. Everyone wants choices. We want security in our health care. Everyone wants security. Affordability. Yes, we want to make sure these products are affordable. And we don't want new bureaucracy, which, interesting, that's a big change from her original proposal back in the 90s on, you know, we're going to create all this new bureaucratic mess in order to accomplish this. She reiterates several times in her piece that this will be done without any new bureaucracy. So, while the theme seemed to be very appealing, I think we do have to worry about the road that it will go down. And I think it's going to increase government control over the delivery of health care in a variety of ways. I think it's going to impose new regulations and requirements on the entire system, the individual mandate being one example. There's an employer mandate. There's insurance mandates. There's provider mandates. You name it. She coins it as shared responsibility, but in reality, it's the government dictating what all these entities in the healthcare system have to do.
Well, all I can say is any program that says the government will have to spend $110 billion a year more means that in reality, we're talking about $300 billion a year more to start with, and eventually $1 trillion. Look, Social Security was promised to us as extremely minimal, and now it is eating up, as other entitlement programs are, our federal budget.
That's right. And we already have problems with our current entitlements. This creates such a massive shift to government control over the healthcare system. It depends also, as you mentioned, talking about funding. It really does depend on some unsound funding resources. I mean, how many times are people going to throw out the Bush tax cuts as a way to pay for their, you know, issue du jour? And so I think we have to worry about that. And on top of it, there, you know, she taps into overpayments, spending on in the private.
All right. Hold on one moment. I'm speaking to Nina Ocherenko, a senior policy analyst at the Heritage Foundation. One more segment and this ongoing series of healthcare. I want to know if plastic surgery prices have really gone down. That may teach us something. You're listening to the Dennis Prager Show. Sean pressed the wrong button, he says. All right. He wanted everybody to know. Dennis Prager here, and it's an ongoing series of attempts to understand healthcare a little more complex than the Einstein's relativity, but we're still working on it. And Nina Ocherenko is my guest. She is senior policy analyst, Heritage Foundation. One more segment here. A couple of questions. Carl Rove, I had on his article in the Wall Street Journal a couple of days ago on healthcare, and among his suggestions was, why is it only tax deductible for employers but not employees' healthcare?
Well, actually, the employer-based system is tax-preferred under the current tax code, and that's the biggest problem from the federal perspective, which is fixing the tax treatment. Today, if you buy your health insurance from the place of work, the value of that benefit, let's say it's a $10,000 policy, is excluded from your taxable income. So the employee themselves gets a huge windfall from enrolling in their employer-based system. Because if you buy that policy on your own, $10,000 policy in the market on your own, you have to use after-tax dollars. There's no comparable tax treatment for people buying health insurance on their own.
Well, what's the justification for that?
That all started, as you mentioned earlier, from the wage and price controls during World War II. And to create the incentive to allow employers to offer this compensation, they wanted to give an extra boost and benefit of saying...
Why wasn't that changed during all the years that the Republicans ran the Congress?
That's right. That's a good question. You know, it's something we've been pushing for a long time. A lot of people are afraid of change and think that this is going to unravel the entire healthcare system.
Wait, how will it unravel it?
Some people, while I don't agree, say that, boy, if you start changing the tax treatment, all these employers are going to drop people from health insurance, and then we'll have all these people who won't have health insurance any longer. Many people in Congress, I believe, are afraid of change, are afraid of moving away from the status quo. And I think that's why we need to create an alternative. Give people a choice. Say, if you want to stay with your employer, fine, but the tax treatment should be the same no matter where you buy your health insurance. The president, actually, in his budget this year, actually did talk about this and kind of broach this subject. Unfortunately, with the change in the Congress, it fell on deaf ears. And I think that was a really missed opportunity because on both sides of the aisle, there is agreement that the current tax treatment does distort the health care system today and really does harm the people who we want to help the most, which are those people that, you know, may not earn a lot of money, who may have a hard time buying health insurance on their own. The employer-based system really doesn't work for them either.
All I know is that we can't afford anymore another nationalized benefit to the population. We can't. It's so elementary. Even if it's desirable, we cannot afford it. Why is this not obvious to people?
Well, and you know, the one thing that in Hillary's plan and other plans that'll probably be coming out, and as we look at them, the one thing that really policymakers should remember is that the first thing they should do is find ways to make coverage more affordable but also more appealing, meaning they have to be priced at the right price. They have to offer the benefits that the consumers want, not some relative number that the federal government or Congress decides this is how much people should pay for health insurance. Until we start to foster a real market in health insurance, we're not going to reap the benefits of lower prices and increased quality. You can't do that through a government mandate, which is what I worry that many in Congress, especially those on the Democratic side, want to do with many of the health care proposals they're putting forth.
A caller made a point that if true, may be very telling. I wonder if you're familiar with this. A caller that I didn't get a chance to take the call, but I saw what he wanted to say. And that was that there is one area where prices have, in fact, gone down, and it's plastic surgery. And his argument is it's because that is not funded. That people have to pay for.
A true consumer market. And another one.
Is that true?
That's true. In many cases, elective plastic surgery.
Yeah.
You can go on web pages,
elective,
and they will give you, quote you prices on what an average price for certain procedures will be. Another great example is LASIK surgery. That is something that tends not to be covered by a health care plan. And so people actually have to go shop around. And what has happened? But prices have declined. There has been some research on that. And I think that's very telling. When you put consumers in a market, you know, the basics of economics work. When you have a supply that of services, the demand will dictate what the price will be. If people want to pay a high price to have an eye lift, then they'll pay the high price. If they don't, then they won't ask for it, and then the physicians and the plastic surgeons will have to drop their price to get consumers.
So let's put that into context here. So will there be a breast surgery ad?
You could have. I mean,
I don't mean elective cosmetic. I mean for like breast cancer.
There are various ways. I think we need to still looking at how do you give people choices in the types of health insurance products they want to buy. You know, catastrophic coverage is an important component to the future of the healthcare system. If people aren't covered for catastrophic costs, they will continue to be a burden on the taxpayers, because the surfer who's surfing out in the Pacific Ocean, who falls off the surfboard and has, a brain problem, is going to go to the hospital and going to get treated for their care and going to be, if he doesn't have health insurance, at the cost of American taxpayers. So we have to talk about not only making sure people have some sort of catastrophic protection, but also allowing them to start engaging in the market. So insurance products begin to look more like what consumers want, not what employers demand or what the government requires of them.
Should people be required to have catastrophic health insurance like they have car insurance?
You know, an individual mandate, you know, there's a carrot and a stick approach. I think that the way many people are looking at it is a stick approach, which is we will penalize you if you don't have health insurance. A better way of looking at it is how do we encourage people to get health insurance themselves? What is keeping the 18 to 25-year-old cohorts out of the health insurance market? It's the cost. It's the price. It's the package of what they're paying for that they're never going to use. We've got to open up the market and make it attractive so that people think, yes, health insurance is a good investment for me. We don't have that today because it is burdened with regulations, mandates, and that drives the price of coverage up and drives the healthy out of the market itself today. So we really need to start looking at federal and at the state level, because people forget that health insurance is actually regulated at the state level. We have to work at the federal and state level to figure out ways to remove the regulations and the requirements and make assurance more affordable.
Final question. When you were a little girl and somebody said, what do you want to do when you grow up? Did you say be a healthcare expert?
Unfortunately, no, but I'm happy I'm here today.
What did you answer?
You know, that's a good question. I don't really know if I had a great vision of it. I think I wanted to go more into foreign policy, but I ended up in domestic policy.
All right.
And I can always say I have a secure job until we fix this healthcare problem.
Well said. Nina Ocherenko, thank you so much. Heritage Foundation.